Hey everybody, this is the Crystal Ball Run podcast from crystalballrun.com. I'm your host today, Kevin McGuire, managing editor of Crystal Ball Run, and I want to just remind everybody that you can give us a follow on Twitter, like us on Facebook. The Twitter handle is at Crystal Ball Run, and of course on Facebook, it's facebook.com/crystalballrun. Just a reminder, you can also subscribe to this podcast in iTunes so you can get it first before it's posted on the site, and you can always check out the show notes on crystalballrun.com. So this offseason, one of the top coaching vacancies to be filled happened to be the University of Texas. Obviously, a lot of big money goes there. A lot of big names were expected to be there. The name that ended up going to Texas was none other than Louisville's Charlie Strong. And of course, if we're going to talk about how this impacts Louisville, there's only one man to talk to, and that is our good friend Mark Ennis. Mark, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. I feel like I sort of reached the end of like a Navy SEAL Hell Week. Like it's just been quite busy around here, but now that everything's sort of settling out, I can kind of relax a little bit.
Mark, of course, is from SB Nation, does some college football stuff, college basketball stuff, and you can hear him on ESPN 680 in Louisville. Mark, I have to imagine the phone lines have been pretty hectic the last couple of days.
Yeah, I'll give you a good example. When it was began to leak that he was going to accept the job at Texas, Charlie Strong, we here on ESPN 680, we went on the air at midnight on a Friday night, just for the hell of it. Just to sort of gauge reaction. From midnight until 2:15 in the morning, the phone lines were lit. Like, they never stopped being full. So, yeah, it's been busy around here, a lot to talk about. And then the hire, of course, only added sort of fuel to that fire.
Yeah, of course. We're going to get to that a little bit. But first, I want to talk about Charlie Strong and what he meant to Louisville, what he leaves behind at Louisville. I think you would probably agree that he certainly leaves the program in a much better situation than the day he took it over. Kind of talk to us about the legacy that Charlie Strong is leaving behind. What does he mean to that university and that program?
Oh, you know, for Charlie, I think what he did was it takes like kind of a long-term view of Louisville. I think that there have been sort of periods of success and then regression, and people get worried that the success was fake or kind of phony or fluky. And so, you know, you go back to the 90s even, and Howard Schnellenberger took them and they win the Fiesta Bowl one year. And then not long after he's gone, they sort of struggle. Ron Turner was terrible, and people get nervous. And then you had basically 8 pretty good years with Petrino and John L. Smith, and people are like, all right, so we can be successful here. And then you have 3 really, really bad, really bad years with Steve Cragthorpe. And I think what Charlie Strong did was sort of come back in and give legitimacy and the feeling that if you have good, competent, confident people in charge, this is a place where you can be successful, and it's a good place to sort of grow a football program. And I think that's the big thing, is in terms of what it means for fans and the city and the program and that sort of thing. I think people are always afraid that the success that they've had was just fluky. And so to have another coach who's good at what he does come in and be as successful as they have been, and do it in such a way that I think people are pretty proud of it, that is really what it meant.
Yeah, Charlie Strong was never really one to get out and really make brash statements or anything like that. He was kind of a reserved kind of guy. That was just the way he was, I thought. But one thing I've probably told you this story before. The first year he took over at Louisville, and he went up to the Big East media days before the conference, the season started. One of the things that he was asked was how he felt about Louisville being picked last in the Big East, and I remember vividly his response was he had never been picked last before. And I kind of got a sense right there that sitting in last place in the preseason rankings definitely did not sit well with him. Not that it would for any coach, but you really got a sense right there that he was going to change the way things were running at Louisville. And of course, as time played out, he certainly built a winner. Certainly did that through recruiting and developing some players. Another one we'll talk about later, Teddy Bridgewater, of course. So I'm kind of curious now that he's going over to Texas, what's your outlook for him at Texas? It seems like there's a lot of skepticism about him being the right guy for Texas, and you know, we'll see how it all plays out. But what's your take on him going to Texas?
You know, I think that he will make a plenty of use of all the good things about Texas, and I think he'll recruit extremely well. He will make that team tougher. I think it will be a lot of fun for. I think fans will sort of embrace his toughness and sort of no goofiness attitude, his demeanor, and I think his impact on the team will be immediate in a number of different ways. And I think that I'm much more bullish on him at Texas than I think a lot of people were. I think Charlie has been around a lot of really, really, really big winning, successful programs. You know, he was at Florida for a long time. He was at South Carolina for a long time. He was at Notre Dame with Lou Holtz when they won championships and was on a staff full of tremendous coaches. The guy knows how to, you know, like, he's not going to go to Texas and be overwhelmed, you know, by the job. So I think, you know, there's going to be an adjustment period, and there's going to be an adjustment, comma, period, for fans who are used to Mack Brown kind of treating that job like he was a U.S. senator. But I think on the field and in dealing with players, they're going to be better and better right away, and that's really all that's going to matter.
Well, it's been kind of interesting from my standpoint, at least, to see how the Texas hiring of Charlie Strong has been received by some. Obviously, there are some old-fashioned guys who aren't quite warming up to it the way that you would have expected, but that's another topic for another day. We'll focus today on Louisville. Of course, with Charlie Strong leaving, they had to bring in somebody else, and I don't know exactly which direction you would have preferred Louisville to go, but they end up going with an old familiar face, and you mentioned him earlier, Bobby Petrino. If there were some questions about Texas hiring Charlie Strong, whether he's the right guy for the job, there seems to be a lot of questions about whether or not Petrino's fit for this job. What's your take on that?
I would not have made the hire. And I think I'm probably in the minority here in the city and among fans. I think a lot of people are just elated. My personal feeling was that he was not worth the PR damage that comes along with bringing him in because of all of his embarrassing history. You know, interpersonally and that sort of thing, but there's really no debating and no arguing at all about his ability to coach and what he does on the field. It's sort of similar to Charlie Strong. You know, right. When you just focus on what happens on the field, the guy's good at what he does. So, you know, if he really has spent these past 2 years since being fired at Arkansas, really working on himself, then I think there's really no reason not to be optimistic about the hire and about sort of the long-term prospects. The only thing you want to see is the staff that he puts together. How well do they recruit? Because it's obviously a much more difficult job than it was when he left, now moving into the ACC. And then you wonder about kind of the recruiting question. You know, what will prospects and families think of him, and how will he be received? And I think those are the things that still, you know, remain to be seen. But if he's done work on himself, if he really is a better and improved man, then I think Louisville's going to be okay, because there's no doubting they got themselves one of the best minds in the game, at least offensively.
Well, I think we can all agree that when Petrino was named the head coach over at Western Kentucky, it wasn't going to be very long before he got another opportunity to go somewhere else. That Western Kentucky job always seemed like just getting his feet wet again in the coaching game after his embarrassing dismissal from Arkansas. So it's not a surprise to me that he has another job already, but it was a surprise to me that it was at Louisville. And you said that there were some, you know, fans that were, I guess, reacting positively about this. Are they just thinking about the coaching in particular?
Yeah, I think that here's the thing about hiring a new coach. You know, most of the time what you're doing is taking what you've seen a coach do somewhere else, and you're imagining it happening where you are. Like as somebody that really likes Florida, like I was always really excited to watch Urban Meyer's Utah team, especially after it looked like that's where they were going to go. But with Bobby Petrino and Louisville, like, he's been here. And people have concrete memories of what the football was like here. And I think that because of that, most people say, you know, if Tom's willing to sort of hold his nose or bite the bullet and hire him, we know what we're getting. And so, yeah, I think there's just a ton of excitement about them because people know what they're going to get.
One question I had about the recruiting aspect was, you know, again, something that some people have asked me of, you know, when you look at Petrino's path in his history, when he leaves the programs, is he leaving them prepared for the next step to be taken? The argument can be made that he hasn't been doing that. You can look at Louisville as an example, possibly, and certainly what's been going on with Arkansas now. Is that a concern going forward with Petrino as far as recruiting is concerned?
It is a concern for me. I'm not really sure that it is a concern for the people in charge. But it's funny that you bring that up, because I think Tom Jurich really went to bat for Steve Kragthorpe after Petrino left, really, you know, sort of highlighting how bad things were set up for him when he took over for Petrino. So it was, from that perspective, kind of surprising that he was willing to sign up to eventually have to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'll say this about Petrino. I think he was doing a good job at Arkansas, and I think that he would have done well there for a long time. But, you know, his time at Louisville, he was not building to build. He was basically sort of putting his personal resume on steroids. And so, you know, everything was really with short term in mind. So I think, you know, this time he's made it pretty clear. I know what I've done as a person is, you know, this is where I'm going to stay. I can't go anywhere else.
Right.
This is where I want to be. So this will be the first time we've really seen him somewhere where everybody knows that's where he's going to be. And he knows that in terms of recruiting and program building and all that stuff, that he'll be sleeping in his own bed.
Right.
So I think we'll see different than what we've seen before. How different probably determines how successful he'll be.
Yeah, of course, that's something that's going to have to play out over time. We'll just have to wait and see, I guess. There is one thing we do know for sure. Petrino is not going to be taking over the same kind of Louisville team that Charlie Strong had last year. One of the big names, of course, that's moving on to the NFL is quarterback Teddy Bridgewater. We talked about Charlie Strong's legacy, but tell me a little bit about the legacy Teddy Bridgewater leaves behind, and was he right to make the decision to go to the NFL this year?
Teddy, first, I'll go backwards. You know, I think he absolutely made the right decision to go. I think really with just about any kid, if you get a first round grade, you should go, because there's just so many miles on a body to play in pro football. You've got to go. And I think that he would have been now looking at playing for a new coach in a new system. You never know. That stuff almost never goes well. I think about Rex Grossman. This is my brain went to Rex Grossman, who could have left Florida after his redshirt sophomore season, which was Spurrier's last year. He comes back and plays the first year for Ron Zook, and I think he really kind of hurt himself because he didn't play that well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, it's good for Teddy to go ahead and skip all of that. I think he made the right decision. But I think he's ready. I think he is absolutely ready. I think he's what you would want in an NFL quarterback. Watching these guys play this weekend, you know, he doesn't do the running stuff, you know, that Kaepernick or somebody does. But watching the throws that it takes to win in the NFL, I don't think there's any doubt to me that Teddy can make those at all. I think he can do any of that stuff. So it's certainly right for him to go. As far as legacy here, I think he's the best football player Louisville's ever had. And that's saying something, but I think he's just once in a generation kind of special. And I think that fans who hope those sort of go along without a hitch, I think Petrino helps.
Yeah.
But that guy was really, really, really special. And I hope people appreciate that as the years go along.
I'm sure they will. It always takes some time for all that to sink in, probably. You know, you never know how good it is until you don't no longer have them to rely on sometimes. But, you know, I look back at last season, and certainly before the year started, you know, Teddy Bridgewater is being talked about in the Heisman conversation. And then somewhere along the line, he falls off. Was it that Central Florida game, even though he had a statistically better game than Blake Bortles?
Well, yeah, I think it was, because here's the thing with Teddy. The Heisman is now a kind of an amalgam of the best player on one of the best teams that probably has a chance to win the Heisman. And win the national championship.
Right, right.
And I think that with Teddy, if he was going to be a Heisman contender, because of who Louisville played in particular, he was either going to have to go undefeated and they were going to have to be a dark horse national championship candidate, or he was going to have to put up the most ungodly of numbers. Like you have to have something that compensates for the schedule.
Right.
And Louisville, just their style of play under Charlie and what they did, they didn't put up ungodly numbers, although Teddy's numbers are astounding. They're outstanding, but they're not video gamey. Mm-hmm. And they didn't, after that Central Florida game, they weren't going to win the national championship. So I think people just stopped paying attention. And I think it really has everything to do with who they played and not how he played.
Yeah, and if you remember that game, I'm telling you, like, I need to remind you. He led a late drive there to give them a chance to win that game. And then Blake Bortles does what he does and just drives right down the field, and we all know how that ended. So it was yeah. unfortunate. You know, I don't have the rooting interest that you guys do, probably, but I wanted to see Teddy Bridgewater win that game, and I thought he did everything he needed to. But you know, he ends his season and his career at Louisville in a resounding success against Miami, so that had to mean something to him.
Yeah, I think that Miami game did serve as a nice little bookend, considering, you know, that he had been a Miami commitment and it was from the area, you know, and that sort of. So for to go out in the state of Florida and playing that well against Miami, you know, that really was kind of a nice bookend for him. If they weren't going to play for a title or be in a BCS bowl, there's probably nothing more sort of symbolic or poetic for him than to be able to sort of stick it to Miami in a bowl game, at least.
So as we move into the offseason, you know, there are going to be some key position battles at Louisville, just like every other college out there. And, of course, quarterback is going to be one of the ones that's going to be put under a little bit of a microscope, given the fact that Bobby Petrino and his history with quarterbacks. And, of course, you're having to replace Teddy Bridgewater. So who is going to be the quarterback that's going to be stepping in, taking the charge, starting this spring?
Well, if last year is any indication, Will Gardner, who will be a redshirt sophomore next year, third-year sophomore, more of a very Bobby Petrino quarterback, a big old kid, almost like Ryan Mallett, 6'5", you know, 230, a super, super big arm, mm-hmm. just hasn't played a lot. Right. And really the scare with him is he's torn the same ACL in one knee two times. He did it once in high school, and he did it once right when he got to Louisville. So he redshirted. He was Teddy's backup this year. He got some reps. I think he threw two touchdowns this year. Not the least bit mobile. I mean, he's a statue, but that's kind of what Bobby Petrino does with his quarterbacks anyway.
Right.
So I think that Will Gardner is going to have a head start, you know, being a Penn State person yourself, that Tyler Ferguson is going to come in now, a guy that was pretty highly recruited out of high school, went the junior college route, was going to go play for Bobby at Western Kentucky. Now is going to come here, will enroll, get involved in that quarterback battle, and then the third will be Kyle Bolin, who was a 3/4-star kid from Lexington that signed with Louisville out of high school, redshirted last year. So I mean, those three, it's going to be an open battle, and because it's new coaches, new offense and everything, it's, you know, Gardner probably still has the lead, but I really would not be shocked if either of those guys, either of the three of them, were the starter. But I think Gardner's the best out of the three.
Just real quick, are there any other key positions that you're going to be keeping an eye on this spring?
Well, I think on defense, now that they are transitioning to a 3-4 with the announcement that they're going to bring in Todd Grantham from Georgia as the defensive coordinator, the defensive ends position, because Marcus Smith is gone, and then their responsibilities change. So I think everything about defensive end, Marcus Smith was so good this year. And Lorenzo Malden comes back this year, but now his position will be different. So I think that's really key. Nose tackle is obviously huge in a 3-4. So whoever's going to do that and play that position, and they have three or four different guys that I think that they can play competently, that'll be big. And then the safeties, right. Hakeem Smith and Calvin Pryor, both just fantastic players. I think they're both going to play on Sundays, both gone. And that's big in a defense. So I think they have some capable guys, but really the position battles are on defense, because on offense, once they pick a quarterback, they've got wide receivers. They're going to bring back all five offensive linemen. They're going to bring back six pretty good running backs. I mean, they've got offensive pieces. Bobby Petrino is going to score a lot of points next year. It's just going to be how well can they stop somebody.
Well, next year, Louisville is going to join the ACC, which I'm sure is going to be a whole lot of excitement for you guys in that area. We don't need to really break down the schedule, of course, because there is no schedule to break down just yet, as we're waiting for the ACC football schedule. But just a couple things on there. You know, Louisville going to Notre Dame. They get Florida State at home. You're defending BCS champions, of course. Miami at home. Going on the road at Kentucky instead of the beginning of the season, at the end of the season, which I think is a nice twist.
That's a home game. That's actually a home game.
I'm sorry, that is a home game. I have that jotted down. But it's at the end of the season in one of those ACC, mm-hmm. SEC games. Again, we don't need to break down the schedule, but you know, what's the excitement level like now going into the ACC this season?
Well, it's enormous, and mm-hmm. I think that for a lot of different reasons. First of all, this year's schedule was really rough. It was really bad, and And you really have, you had to spend a lot of time apologizing for it. You know, people sort of discount everything they did because of the schedule. So I think just to not have that this year excites people. But, you know, this is because they're in the ACC. This is one of the years where Notre Dame will be on the schedule. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for Louisville, half the schedule next year is Florida State, Miami, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Kentucky. You know, and that is just far better than it's been really in decades since they were an independent when Howard Schnellenberger was here. So there's a lot of excitement, a ton of excitement. And I think the big thing, thinking big picture, is that because they were in the AAC and the Big East, it was so easy for them to be invisible when there were national college football discussions. You know, that you knew College Game Day was never going to come here, and you knew College Game Day was never going to talk about you. You know, you knew you were going to have to play on at noon and on weeknights, you know, that sort of thing. And I think, you know, you knew there was not going to be an Athlon or a Street and Smith AAC magazine. You weren't even going to get one, you know. And now all the different ways where your program will be like visible, all of a sudden now you're a part of that, and you're going to play the Heisman Trophy winner, and you're going to play, you know, that Notre Dame at Notre Dame and that sort of thing. And like you said, now the Kentucky game is the last game of the year, and it's going to be a cold weather game, and Kentucky's probably going to be better next year. So yeah, it's going to be complete 180 in terms of schedule and excitement and visibility and sort of perceived legitimacy starting next year. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun for a lot of people.
Well, Mark, there's certainly a lot to talk about with Louisville right now. It's got to be an exciting time. Obviously, not just the football, but there's so many other success stories going on at that university over the last year. So going into March Madness, I'm sure there'll be a lot of excitement there again. But yeah, definitely want to keep your opinions on Louisville football on the podcast as much as we can going forward. We'll definitely have you on before the season starts, if that's all right with you.
Sounds good to me. Anytime, Kevin. It's good to talk to you again, buddy.
All right, Mark. Mark Ennis from SB Nation. Again, at ESPN 680 in Louisville. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Mengus22. Mark, thank you so much. We're going to talk to you again soon, all right?
Okay, buddy. Anytime.
So my thanks to my friend Mark Ennis from SB Nation and ESPN 680 in Louisville. Make sure you, again, follow him on Twitter at Mengus22. Make sure you follow us on Twitter as well, at Crystal Ball Run. And again, I'm Kevin McGuire. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin on CFB. For Mark and everybody at Crystal Ball Run, I want to thank you guys for listening to this episode of the podcast. Remember, you can subscribe to this in iTunes, and you can check it out on Podomatic whenever it's available. And of course, check out crystalballrun.com. Make sure you subscribe, follow us on Twitter at Crystal Ball Run, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/crystalballrun. And until next time, everybody, we'll talk to you later.